It is 7:06. You're listening to 100.5 FM. Good morning. I'm Ray Richardson. Thanks for joining us. Boy, a lot of y'all are upset at me because I said, why are Ukrainian refugees getting Social Security? I told you where to go look for it. Go to the Social Security Administration website and go hunt down Joe Biden's order in June of 22. You don't have to take my word for it. I never, ever, ever want a single soul in this audience to take my word for anything. I've told you that for almost 22 years now. But I told you where to go find the information. You still don't believe me? That's okay. I don't care. Doesn't matter whether you believe me or not. It's still happening. That's what matters. It's actually happening. So you can be upset about it or not. But the fact of the matter is Joe Biden signed an order. And refugees from Ukraine get Social Security benefits as long as they qualify like you and I do. Except they never paid a dime into it. Unless they were working in Ukraine all their lives, paying into Social Security, which I think is highly unlikely. Just Joe Biden, you know, he didn't give a damn. He was going to fight for the protection of Social Security. That's what he told you, so he can scare you. If you're old and feeble and you're worried to death, your benefits might be cut. Joe Biden was going to fight for you. What he didn't tell you was he was adding people to the Social Security rolls who never paid a dime in but were getting benefits, thereby weakening the program, which is already weak enough. It'll be insolvent in 2032 because politicians are politicians, and we all know what that means. David Jones walked in the door. Good morning, David Jones.
Good morning, Raymond Richardson. And I'll tell you, that you know, I hear this infuriates me, and I listened to that girl on the way in. You know, they don't want us to know this. They have no desire for the American people who give them this money to know what's going on. And you know, any person that's never paid in or not an American citizen collecting money off of our backs, as far as I'm concerned, it's criminal. I mean, and these people should be thrown in jail.
It's bizarre.
Wrong. It's wrong to take that
money.
Well,
the refugees should be thrown in jail. They are doing, you know, they're
no, I'm talking about the government.
Well,
the people
Joe Biden,
who said let's give them this money.
You know,
right?
he's a elderly, sympathetic old man with a bad memory. Dr. Peter Earle is joining us. Doctor, you have a PhD in economics. Let me ask you something. If you have a program that is already financially weak because of how it's been administered, and then you add people to receive benefits from that same program who have never paid a dime in, is the program stronger or is the program weaker? Good morning, Doc.
Good morning. Yeah, so I mean, clearly what's happened is, you know, when Social Security was set up, it was basically two people were paying for one person to retire. And now it's something like one person supporting 12 or 13, and as it turns out, probably way more than that. And it's not even a pyramid scheme. It's way worse. What it is it's a huge flow of resources out of the government, taking more and more from us, going to this one program, and basically, you know, setting people up for failure. I mean, the program is it's a complete waste of time and resources. I don't even know why, if they're going to milk it like that, they even have employees there. It should just be like a siphon coming from my pockets directly to beneficiaries. But it doesn't make any sense. But
yeah.
Thankfully, from what I hear, there's people on the case right now looking into it.
Well, they are. They're absolutely looking into it.
Rumor.
And that's what we need. We need people looking into it. Elon Musk posted yesterday or the day before, last week, I don't recall, it doesn't matter, there's so much stuff coming out, saying that there are literally people who are 150 years old getting Social Security benefits.
Yeah, it's insane.
And, and so people say, well, that's impossible. How is that happening? Well, we all know because we've heard the stories for years. There was just never anybody willing to do anything about it. Is grandma, was getting a Social Security check and she died and nobody said anything about it because they needed those checks to keep coming in. So the grandchildren or the children or the neighbor who took care of the dog or some dadgum person kept getting those checks and cashing them, and the government didn't know grandma died because they don't have any checks and balances. They just send money out like water running out of a faucet. They don't care. They don't care. They just don't care. We all know that, but nobody's willing to say it. So grandma kept getting the checks, even though she's been dead for 25 years. That's what happened.
But who's getting the money now? That's what we want to
know. Well, that's it.
That's a criminal act, cashing a check. That's for not for you, from the federal government. So what do you do to all these people and it's not just one or two people. It's a lot of people. The numbers I'm seeing are staggering. Now, how many people that are, you know, over 100 years old that are getting checks?
Yeah, and so, and, you know, the thing about it is that Here's the weirdest part in America today. The people that are defrauding the system, that are making it less strong, nobody's upset with them. They're mad at Elon Musk and Donald Trump for exposing
it. Did you hear about the woman that sold her Tesla and gave the money to NPR?
Yeah, that was some actress or something.
Yeah, some ridiculous
singer or something.
She already bought the car, all right? Yeah. So Elon's fine. Yeah. But, you know, the idea she took, what kind of protest is that?
I don't know. It's bizarre
what these people are doing. They're mad at Elon for doing a job that we should have been doing for a long time.
I think it was Sharon Stone, wasn't it?
I think it was Sheryl Crow, the same woman that wants everyone to use.
Oh, that's right. Yes, it was Sheryl. Anyway.
Yeah, the woman that wants everybody to use one swath of toilet paper. You know, how they're perforated.
Sheryl Crow did that?
Oh, yeah, she was.
Good luck with that, baby. I don't know how that's going to happen.
I don't think I'd want to have dinner with her. That's all I know.
Jesus. The stuff they come up with, these people are lunatics.
Just bizarre.
I want her to use one piece of toilet paper.
But they have a public forum, and of course, people go gaga over celebrity because I assume they want to be one. And so that's why they worship celebrity. So one of the faithful guys that listens to the show is a guy named Gordon Draper. He's a veteran of the United States Navy. He wanted me to ask you, let me see if I can read it here properly. What would be the results if we reevaluated gold to the economy?
So if we made it, for example, a backstop for the dollar, that sort of thing?
Yeah, well, I told him you were a big gold guy and you believed we should go back to a gold-backed currency. I think what he was saying is that, so the economy, I don't even know how big our economy is now. I don't know what our GDP is. But basically, what if we made gold, so that what our economy is, that would be the corresponding price to gold instead of what it is now. I think it's close to $3,000, isn't it?
Yeah, it's right at $3,000.
Yeah, so,
right.
So do you under? I may not be asking the question correctly, so I want to be clear about that. But does that question make sense to you? And if it does, what would you say to it?
Yeah, I think what he's asking is what if we made gold sort of more like the center of gravity of our economy, which could mean the government has to hold a certain amount. It could mean we go back to a Bretton Woods system where the dollar is linked to gold, but all the other currencies are linked to the dollar, or could mean the classic gold standard where every dollar literally, if you bring it to a bank and you hand it to someone, they'll hand you a piece of gold, or vice versa. All of those things do one thing, and that is if they are set up the proper way, which means without any loopholes, what they do is they constrain the ability of the Federal Reserve to print. And if the Fed can't print money, then the Treasury is limited because a lot of the sales of bonds go right onto the Fed's balance sheet. So that would immediately have an effect of washing government spending. It would arrest, to a large extent, inflation. It would make prices more stable. But would also mean that it would become immediately clear how far beyond our means we're living. Right? So all of a sudden, what Doge is discovering right now, these huge flows of money out to all these other places, that would not be possible. It would at the very least stop at this point, or probably it would have to contract. So, I can only think of really benefits, for the U.S. economy, with the exception of people who make their money or who rely upon money printing. And that would be just about 99% of the government. There would be a lot of businesses that are closely tied to the government, for example, defense contractors, all that sort of thing. So, there would definitely be winners and losers, but I think most of the losers would be those who are making money and the only beneficiaries there are from money printing and inflation.
Let me ask you a question that I think goes right along with all of that. What would happen in the short term and then, of course, in the long term if we simply abolish the Federal Reserve?
Well, the question is always like, do we abolish it, like just walk in there and say, okay, that's it, everybody's fired today, or do we say, okay, we're going to take 6 months transition away from central banking, right? In the first case, let me just say, okay, in both cases, you wind up with less inflation, a more stable dollar, a more stable economy, more growth, that sort of thing. In the first case, you wind up with some huge disconnects and some problems for a couple of months. It could be a very trying time. We could have a recession, all that sort of thing. If we had a transition plan where we said, okay, listen, Federal Reserve employees, you've got 1 year, you've got 6 months, and we're going to shift from, the dollar being paper to being backed by gold. We're going to switch all these payment systems that the Fed provides. We're going to push that, onto like a private system, some internet-based system. We could say, listen, we're going to, instead of having Federal Reserve officials monitor banks, we're going to get big consulting firms to do it, the country, you know, that sort of thing. I mean, if there was a plan in place and it was over, say, 6 months or a year, the bumps in the road would not be that great, and it would be great for the economy. If we went in there angrily, which I see some, I think there's some entertainment value to that, and kick everybody out, there would be some turbulence, but still, over time, as long as we stayed the course, things would be pretty good, and so, the economy would be better in any case.
So overall, it'd be great for America.
It would be great for America, and you know why? I'll tell you another thing. If the U.S. was the first one, I've said this so long, whoever is the first nation that gets away from central banking and maybe puts a gold or a silver-backed currency in place, you're going to have all the nations, citizens of all the nations of the world, wanting to hold your currency.
Right,
there'd be so
right.
much demand, it would be incredible. So, I mean, not only would it be doing it, not only would doing it be great, but it would be great for everybody in the world who wants a stable currency. So, yeah, I mean, there's only upside, with the exception, as I said, of the fact that, you know, we've got to live within our means. A lot of Americans are not ready for that. They're not ready for
a little pain,
Yeah, right. And the other thing is just, depending upon how we do it, it could either be, you know, with upheaval, or it could be a little smoother. I had a friend for years, he passed away a few years ago, Steve Wunsch, and he was a Wall Street guy, but he always said the only way I'd want to add to the government is basically a job placement service for ex-government employees.
Yeah.
Basically, you know, go to those people and say, listen, here are the opportunities I have. You're going to have to be mobile, right? Just because you live in New York doesn't mean we're going to find a job for you there. But we're going to do something to ease the transition. And then that, you know, government to civilian job placement service, that wraps itself up after, say, a year or 2 years.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right about that. I've always thought that was a really good idea. You know, anytime somebody loses a job, that hurts their family. We don't want to hurt families,
sure,
but we don't want to hurt the country just to preserve jobs that we don't need. I mean, nobody in the private sector would do that, but in the government, we do that. I actually think the Federal Reserve is as crooked could be, and they manipulate our country and the world with currency. And, you know, we talk about China being a currency manipulator. The Federal Reserve is a currency manipulator.
That's exactly what
they are. I mean, I don't know why people won't acknowledge that.
Any nation with a central bank is going to be doing that. And by the way, I mean, of course, I'm not going to make an excuse for China, but I will say this. Usually when China moves its currency, it's with respect to what the dollar does. So they are sort of following the Federal Reserve, and they do so in a way that benefits their export.
So they're doubly corrupt. Doubly corrupt. There we go.
If you've got a central bank, if you've got a central bank, you're manipulating the currency, period.
Doc, I told you I'm going back to a regular schedule here, something I haven't done for the last 6 months. So we're going to have to take a break here. One, because I'm a high-priced talent, we have to run commercials to pay me. But the other is, I do want to take a brief moment here. I hope I pronounce his name correctly. Will Ruger, did I pronounce it correctly?
Yes, sir.
Will Ruger, who is the president of the American Institute for Economic Research, says he is pleased to announce that Peter Earle, and I'm going to add a PhD in economics and a graduate of West Point, will be assuming a new role at the American Institute for Economic Research. He will be taking over as director of our economics and economic freedom priority focus area and will retain his title as senior research fellow. He will be responsible for helping us develop our economic freedom strategies and oversee our work in this vertical. So along with Will Ruger, I want to congratulate you, Doc. That's a big step up.
Yeah, big one. Big one.
Thank you.
As George Jefferson said, you moving on up to the east side. Well, you're in the Berkshires, but this is a big deal. So just briefly, tell us this means for you. I know it's a big deal. You and I talked about it way back when this was being considered.
Yeah.
Just explain to the audience what this means for you. And by the way, well-deserved, well-deserved.
Thank you. So we have three focus areas at AIR. One is monetary, one is economics and economic freedom. That's the biggest one. And then another one is defending freedom and fighting collectivism. And I will be moving up in charge of that one, but nothing else will change. I'll still do all the media. I'll still do all the writing. But what it will mean is that I will be, meeting with the president and the board and, helping to determine what we, you know, spend our time on, spend our effort on going forward, and I will have three economists underneath me, all good guys. So it's a lot more work on top of a lot of work that I already do, but it's a labor of love, and I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, I know, and it's a well-deserved honor. You are just incredible. I tell everyone your greatest strength, in my opinion, is you can take the completely complex issues of economics and break it down where if you're getting ready for work or you're driving to work or you're getting your kids ready for school, you still can understand what's being said, digest it, and figure out what it means for you and what it means for our country. That is a gift you have. My friend Sarah Parshall Perry has that from a legal perspective, and you have it from an economic standpoint. A lot of people don't have that, Doc, but you do.
Well, that's, you know, that is the mission here at AIR, is not to write papers that nobody will read or to do, you know, arcane math, but rather to reach the American everyman, person out there who's not an economist, who either, you know, works in an office or they do blue collar work, and to, for them to understand that these issues affect all of us. Central banking, you know what I mean, the waste of government, those are not arcane issues. Those affect all of us in our paychecks. So that's what we were set up in 1933 to do.
Well, you're absolutely right about that. And we talked earlier about the gold standard, backing our currency with the gold standard, making us live within our means. If we did that, taxation in this country would drop dramatically, in my mind, because we would be living within our means instead of how we live now in this country.
Yep. And we would have a currency that gained value rather than losing it.
Absolutely. We have got to grab a quick break. Doc, can you hang around?
Absolutely.
It is 7:22.
If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well...